This is the Annex, a sociology podcast. I'm Joe Cohen.
I'm Leslie Hinkson.
And I'm Gabriel Rossman.
Our guest today is Victoria Reyes from the University of California, Riverside. Victoria is the author of Global Borderlands, Fantasy, Violence, and Empire in Subic Bay, Philippines, with the University of California Press. Today, hazing graduate students. Our interview was recorded on September 24th, 2019. So one topic that I've seen come up time and time again on my Twitter feed is that of academic hazing. And I guess the idea is that, you know, people are looking at abuses of power all over the place, and we are coming to identify them and, you know, trying to purge them from, you know, our lives. And this is one of them. And there's no doubt, as we can all attest, that there are some facets of graduate school that are very demoralizing, you know, stress-inducing.
Infantilizing.
And some that are really, you know, a form of unfair, you know, treatment or, you know, maltreatment. Mm-hmm. But there's a line to draw, all right? So, for example, recently I saw a post being circulated by colleagues from a blog that decried the use of, quote, rituals that trigger feelings of imposter syndrome, humiliation, encourage overwork and burnout, and lead to physical and mental health and decline in an academic setting. And the author goes on to list things like lots of reading.
Wait, before we do that, let's talk about what it ain't, right? Because when I saw hazing, I was thinking about the time that I took both of you, made you dress up in diapers, got you drunk, and then shoved you into Lake Carnegie and had you swim to shore.
No, thank you, sir. May I have another?
And then it turns out that basically hazing is just graduate school.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like writing papers and reading things.
Right. There is somewhere. So this, we have on one side of the thing, this woman who decries like heavy reading lists or like demanding qualifying exam reading lists or professors who are too critical of drafts of dissertation chapters. Basically, there's people who might view demands, what I see as legitimate work demands, as a form of hazing and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these are precisely the people who, you know, want the bar to be lowered for everything that stands in front of them in their career path, but also maintain the ones behind them. Like, I presume whoever wants an easy path to a PhD or a job doesn't want easy admission into their graduate school program.
I have a feeling that the kind of person who complains about this also thinks everyone should be able to go to graduate school.
Right.
And you shouldn't have to do anything when you get there. And everyone who finishes should get a tenured job.
Right. And then the end result of that is somebody berating all of the readers for not buying their books or citing them, right? That's where that ends up.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, in reading this piece, right, mm-hmm. although I thought to myself, you know what, these examples of hazing I don't exactly see as actual hazing.
Mm-hmm.
To me, like, I don't think, hopefully it doesn't undermine the fact that hazing does actually exist in graduate school, right? And extends into your career as a junior faculty member, right? I mean, so I remember my first semester in graduate school, like just one of the many hazing incidents. And I will say the majority of the hazing that I received was from one faculty member in particular.
Oh.
And yeah, I remember being at the actual physical annex, right? having drinks, and one of my cohort members saying, so this other cohort member had a meeting with this faculty member, and this faculty member showed him a ranked list of everyone in our cohort. And this cohort member was number one on the list. And Leslie, you were at the very bottom of the list.
Ouch.
Right? And I was like, okay, right? Like, what criteria? I was like, I know I wasn't a social major as, you know, as an undergrad. And I was like, but still, why would a faculty member? I was like, first of all, are you sure this person isn't lying? No, I verified. Why would a faculty member do that, right? Like in the first weeks of graduate school, right? And also too, I mean, come on, how many people were in the cohort? There were like 12 people in the cohort, right? You know what I mean? The fact that you're at the bottom of the list of like 12 people out of how many people, who, right? And so, and also too, then like years later, then serving on graduate admissions for the department, I was like, okay, this is what divides the points that this, that person at the top gets and person at the bottom. I mean, that was hazing, right? This same faculty member would also put like articles in my mailbox about how women who have children in graduate school or women who are junior faculty with children. So if you're in grad school, you have a kid, you're not going to graduate. If you, and also, right. And I was like, and so to me, if you're going to do that, if you're going to do that without saying, hey, you know,
right,
these articles are out here, I want to make sure that, you know what I mean, that you're good. That's one thing. But to just shove an article in your mailbox your first semester of graduate school when I showed up with a kid, right?
Yeah.
Like what? So that is a particular type of hazing, right?
I actually
believe. And we need to not do that. Like faculty need to not do that.
I would say that that's really bad mentoring, and that...
Oh, this person wasn't my mentor.
No, but, well, mentoring cohort-wide, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, no, I understand that the person wasn't your advisor or anything, but I, you know, what you're describing, it sounds like this is really poorly conceived advice to a graduate student, and even more poorly delivered advice, but that's a little bit different than hazing, you know?
I don't know, Gabriel, because like I said, it wasn't advice. It was articles that are just like FYI, right? Uh-huh. You know what I mean? It's like not, that's not advice, right? It's like advice would be, okay, if this is a reality, right? How do we make sure, or how do you make sure that, you know what I mean? That you thrive, right? How do we make sure that this thing that is supposedly an indicator of you're not being able to finish this program, how do we make sure that that doesn't apply to you? There was none of that. So it was not about advice. It was about just saying here, right? And now that you know this, right? How soon are you going to leave?
So what are we to avoid as faculty if we don't want to victimize students? What can we do concretely to still encourage students to do the kind of work that they need to be good, but not unfairly demoralize them or still act as good stewards of all students' development? Like, what are the guidelines you think we should be following or the pitfalls we should be avoiding besides these more egregious examples, right? That's just awful.
But, I mean, that seems egregious, but it happens quite a lot, especially to graduate students of color, others who are marginalized. I mean, for me, I got on this whole advice column kick in part because of my commitment to revealing what they call, right, the hidden curriculum. And to me, when I read this blog post, what comes across is this lack of explanation about the purposes. So for me, I try to be very transparent with my graduate students about what they're supposed to get out of each stage of the process. Mm-hmm. Here is why I'm doing this. Your general exams are supposed to do this. These may be hard reading. So to me, it seems like there's a bit of a cultural capital aspect to what's going on and how to actually go about graduate school. And there's this mentoring aspect that goes along to it to explain exactly what each part of this is supposed to be. Because people who don't know, who don't have the cultural capital, it's very hard. And I say this with personal experience, to navigate, right? To navigate. Mm-hmm. Why am I doing this? Especially when you have people saying, oh, well, you know, the general exam is just a barrier. It's just supposed to, you know, your prospectus is just like an obstacle. No, I very much sit down my students and say, you know, this is what you're supposed to get out of a general exam. It's supposed to introduce you to the debates of the field. It's supposed to do X, Y, Z. And, you know, I've had to fail students on general exams. And I'm sure it's not easy. It's not, you know, people cry, et cetera. And what I try to do is I try to explain, right? And so we have this revise and resubmit option where then let me work with you more and let me break down how to answer this question, right? Let me break down how can you go about doing this rigorous kind of work, because I've worked with a lot of students and sometimes they do think that I'm too critical, et cetera. But I try to express to them that I am trying to help them create the most rigorous argument they can, theoretically, methodologically. So that That's my...
Yeah, I want to agree with almost everything you said, except I think the cultural capital, there's kind of an implication there that it's like, well, this is especially important for the 30% of people who don't have this. I'd say it's more like the 90% of people who don't have the set of expectations, because the fact is, even if your parents are college educated or have professional jobs, they didn't get, you know, almost none of them have, you know, letters in science, PhDs, mm-hmm. you know, even if your father's a lawyer or something like that, that's very different from getting a letters in science PhD. Now, if they are a letters in science PhD, you can definitely see that.
Yeah.
Mm. And, you know, all of us had one or two people in our cohort, or at least the adjacent cohort, where their parents were academics, and you could see that there was that hidden curriculum.
Like famous academics, some of them.
Yeah, yeah. So you could tell, and it was funny, because like I can think of two people who Leslie and Joe and I went to graduate school with, whose parents were academics, one of whom had kind of like a kind of like lackadaisical, almost aristocratic approach to the program. And the other had like, okay, next 2 weeks are blocked out for, you know, reviewing the literature. After that, I'm getting the paper out and I'm not taking any more classes because coursework doesn't count, only getting things on mm-hmm. your CV before you go on the market. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that her father told her that, and it was good advice. And it's like a hidden curriculum thing, mm-hmm. you know? So, but very few people have that. And so,
point taken. I agree.
Yeah. So I'm saying that your advice is better advice than you realize, in that it applies to basically almost all students.
Yeah. And advice to the people who are advising us, right? I remember going to our director of graduate studies at one point, and so I'm not giving names, it could be multiple people, and saying, okay, I'm preparing for these generals, right? And I'm not entirely certain how I should be approaching this, right? Mm-hmm. And he looked at me like I had two heads. He was like, what? And I was like, well, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't. And his advice was for me to go and talk to people who were in cohorts above me, right? And mm-hmm. so when you get that kind of advice, you're kind of like, what? Okay, right? And like, if we want to make sure that we actually capitalize on the human capital that we bring mm-hmm. into graduate programs, we need to make sure that we impart this knowledge. Like, you know what I mean? You shouldn't be going and talking to other, you know, like people in higher cohorts. I equate that to like learning about sex in the girl's bathroom, right? You know what I mean? By reading all the writing on the bathroom stalls, you're like, not that informative. So yeah, I mean, I think that if that's what it is we want to do, and if this isn't just about a sorting and sifting process, right? Mm-hmm. Then yeah, we need to be trying to provide all of our students with as much information as possible so that they are approaching this with their eyes wide open.
Mm-hmm. I came across something. It's funny, we were prepping for today's show and I came across an interesting tweet on Katya Ivanova's timeline. And it was an econ student who was talking about being devastated by being attacked by a senior faculty member at an in-house seminar. Mm-hmm. And there's also a dynamic.
What are they doing in an econ program?
It's kind of true. Kind of true.
Right. She was like, she wrote that it was her first time. It was her first time presenting her research to colleagues at an in-house seminar. And she felt humiliated in front of a senior professor who, I guess, picked apart her work and whatever. And it was funny. Someone responded, well, you know, along the lines of, this is normal, take it in stride. You got to be a trooper, like in Full Metal Jacket. And then Lucas Neville of the University of Winnipeg is like, isn't that the movie where like a recruit kills himself under the weight of abuse from a drill sergeant?
Yeah.
Funny quips aside, there is one type of hazing that is very clear to me. And it's that one. It's the one where you punch down aggressively in a public setting. And the reason is almost invariably, as you go through this business and you become more confident with yourself, you realize that it is really easy to take apart any study by anyone. You can take apart any qual study on representativeness. You can take apart any quant study on omitted variable bias. You can take apart on oversimplification, undersimplification. And if you want to humiliate someone, you deliver that generic criticism with an oblique implication in tone and manner that person is either incompetent or somehow shirking their duties. There is a way to do it. We've all seen it. It's hard to articulate. Mm-hmm. That, what's that?
Well, Marvin Bresler, who he was an emeritus prof who used to hang out and amuse the grad students when we were all in grad school. Yeah. He would always say that there's only two questions you have to ask at a job talk or a seminar or anything to just like completely shut it down. And right. one of them is, but is it really so complicated? And the other is, but is it really so simple?
Yeah, it's true. But yeah. you know, those type using those generic criticisms, which can be levied at any study at any time, when people do that, they are really just using their and they do it in a way where if somebody is your superordinate, you cannot openly challenge them because you are in a vulnerable position. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're tenured, I mean, one of my greatest victories was dealing with one of these hecklers from the audience and turning to the audience and saying, like, can anybody explain this nonsense to me? Because I can't. And there was no voice, nobody said a word. And he was just some old fuddy-duddy asshole. But in any case, you can't do that when it's when you're a grad student and it's a professor. But make no mistake about it, that type of behavior is abusive and relies on an exercise of power, because there are certain types of studies that criticizer themselves cannot overcome. There's always a different model. You could have tried a different variable, sample representation, mm-hmm. and all that BS.
Yeah, and I think that also, you know what I mean? It's like the fact that we're all like, oh, well, it's econ. What do you expect, right? You know, yeah. the fact that this kind of behavior is actually normalized, right, in certain, mm-hmm. within certain disciplines, right? And mm-hmm. even within the disciplines like sociology, we're supposedly very polite. Right. Yeah. You know, let people present. You don't interrupt until the end, except for point of clarification. Yep. You know what I mean? The fact that that kind of behavior is normalized anywhere, like, mm-hmm. I think is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And not just that it's normalized, but then as part of our socialization and professionalization process in graduate school, we actually learn to accept, right, that it is normal, right, to expect to be humiliated, and that it's good for mm-hmm. you, right? It's good for you. And you're like, what? So I can make less money than I would have made if I went to business school? I don't know, right? And so it's like, we don't have that to the same extent in sociology as a discipline, I don't mm-hmm. think. But it does happen. And, you know, in these kinds of processes of normalizing behavior that would be seen as antisocial, right, in other contexts, right, I think are things that we really, really should be thinking about as a whole within academia. Like, thinking about what are useful practices for helping to ensure that, like, we extract as much, like, you know, productivity and knowledge from these graduate students as possible? And what are the ones that actually help to shut down, right, that, you know, that process of extraction in ways in which you don't know what you're losing? You never know what you lost by perpetuating these processes.
And, you know, I agree 100% with both of you. And I think that it is something that is learned through a graduate school, how to respond. And for me, my time at Princeton, I feel like I really appreciated that professionalization. Mm-hmm. I also want to kind of draw this line of what is abusive and what is critical feedback, because mm-hmm. I think those things are very different. And I think in this post, yes. this blog post, that it kind of blurs the line.
Oh, yeah. Right?
And I think that's wrong. You know, I think that there's something about tone that, you know, I've been on the receiving end of it, but I like to give this story. So my ethnography piece on transparency was part of a conference at Berkeley, and Loic Wacquant was my discussant. And he, you know, when he was discussing, he was going on the board and writing things in my response. I was going on the board and responding, you know, like, well, this is in fact XYZ. And a graduate student came up to me afterwards and was like, oh, you never hear about these heated discussions and, you know, at each other's throats. That's what it's like. And for me, I was like, that's not how I experienced that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That to me was like, he was engaged. He read the paper. He obviously had comments. And even mm-hmm. afterwards, I like thanked him. And he suggested, you know, here's Javier Ayero, go meet mm-hmm. with him. And, you know, mm-hmm. and so I think that sometimes, especially early career scholars, blur this line between abusiveness and what is kind of critical thinking, what is engagement. That's why I always, like, reviewers, I always tell my graduate students. Like people, sometimes I write these like 2-page reviews. I'm like, that means someone read, took the time out and really read and thought about your piece. There are actual ones, but there's this line. Right.
Yeah. When I was reading this blog post, it reads to me like what this person wants out of advisors is neglect and a gold star.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah.
I mean, like one line. So like students are told their MA chair won't sign off until their paper is deemed, quote unquote, publishable. And it's like, yeah, that's good.
That's standard. Right?
You should want that.
Yeah, right? Standard. That's not standard in the same way of, you know, I got beaten by the upperclassmen, so you should get beaten by the upperclassmen.
Yeah.
That's showing that it's like, well, if you're going to go on the job market, you're going to need a publishable paper.
Absolutely.
Which, by the way, is not crazy. You know, it's not like, oh, you know, if I had, you know, if I ran the zoo, I'd make a few changes. That's just what I do. It's like, it makes sense that you should have a publication. And, you know, the MA paper is a pretty good mechanism for ensuring that you have an early publishable paper.
Yes.
And saying like you should go back and revise it rather than just saying, oh, that's great. You know, because it's like Victoria was saying, you don't even have to read the paper to say, oh, that's great.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if I don't give feedback, that means I don't care enough to give feedback.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the thing I think that a lot of students don't realize is the real threat or the real, you know, pitfall when you go out into the big world is indifference and disengagement and that type of tepid engagement that doesn't engage you at all substantively. And it's like, oh yeah, that's a very good paper, which is really the equivalent of nothing.
Yeah.
And that's what you're fighting against. Most people will not give a crap about anything you write.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's just, you know.
Yeah. And all this stuff, I mean, in the post, it's like, well, and what this is really saying is you're a dumbass. You don't belong here, blah, blah, blah. It's like, don't read between the lines.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah.
You know, just take the advice and don't infer from it, you know, some kind of inferiority complex and then say, well, you know, I'm going to infer anything other than it's perfect. Go on to the next step.
Yes.
Is an insult because it's like this is feedback that actually improves you. And it doesn't mean that. It just means, you know, nothing is perfect on a first draft. Everything needs feedback and advice.
And the other thing I will say is, you know what? I mean, I actually liked the hundreds of pages of reading, right? I was like, that's kind of like, I was like, oh, this is like my fantasy of graduate school, right? There's going to be all this reading. I mean, I know for sure, like our demography colleagues were like, oh my God, right? This is not what I came to grad school for, right? At least not in the first two, you know, those first 2 years of coursework, right? But I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I was like, there's no other time and place like in which I could have, and I thought of it as a luxury, right? It might not be exactly what it was I wanted to be reading, but I thought of it as part of my training. And I also thought it was a luxury and a privilege, right? And you know, whatever. And the chapters I thought were boring, I just skimmed, right? So
that's right. And even the stuff I hated at the time, and you know, I still think it's kind of crap. Like I'm glad I read volume 1 of Das Kapital in graduate school.
Oh yes.
Like, I think it's a stupid book. And it's
basically
communist Aristotle. But like you know, I'm still glad I read it. You know, I consider it like an essential part of my cultural literacy that like, if I want to call myself a social scientist, I should be familiar with the arguments.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to say that what the blog post kind of going up that I think we as faculty could do better is also give what the student did well. You know, I always try to sandwich like, oh, I can tell you put a lot of work into this and you have some interesting ideas, but here's where you need to work. Right. Like, I think people sometimes need that contextualization of why we're giving this critical feedback, how to make it better, even though if it feels like you're saying the same thing over and over again, which I sometimes feel like I do. I feel like, especially for early graduate students in particular, that's really important to do because they're coming into graduate students as like, they were the A students. They were always on top. They never had any bad feedback. And so I think our role is to also, here's what you did well. And let me tell you, here's what you need to work on. And let me tell you why I'm giving you this critical feedback, right? It's in order to engage you. It's in order to be very specific and not make ad hominem attack, blah, 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 blah. So I think that's important.
Yeah.
And to me, reading that blog post, the person didn't get that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's that. And also, this job involves being able to read crap loads. And my experience of the first year trial by fire was it was like building up to a marathon where I could read something pretty fast and do a lot of it without getting tired. And complaining about reading a lot is like wanting to be a marathon runner and not running.
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, how are you going to build up this skill? Unless you want to be a lightly read academic, which I don't know what role there is for you. Like, you wouldn't want to be at a department where the lightly read academics are teaching. So who's going to hire you, you know?
Yeah, I could swear. I forget who said this, but I remember somebody saying kids who don't like boats shouldn't join the Navy.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah.
You've been listening to The Annex, a sociology podcast. Special thank you to Victoria Reyes from UC Riverside. Her book is Global Borderlands, Fantasy, Violence, and Empire in Subic Bay, Philippines, with Stanford University Press. We're on the web, sociocast.org/annex, on Twitter at SociAnnex, and on Facebook, The Annex Sociology Podcast. Our producer is Liseth Moreno. Theme music is by Lena Orsa. On behalf of Leslie Hinkson and Gabriel Rossman, I'm Joe Cohen. Thanks for listening.
Bye.